Damon Hack alongside Eamon Lynch, Golf Week Magazine. A lot of coffee golf coming up this week for fans of Lynx Golf. Three of the best courses in creation. About to get their close up.
It really doesn't get much better than a week like this because you are going to get some kind of foul weather in Scotland. You get it in the summer. You're certainly going to get it in October. The old course is as good as it gets. Kings Barn's only been around for 25 years.
Feels like it's been around forever.
It does, and it's an awesome golf course. And then Carnoustie, a.k.a. Carnassie, which is the golf equivalent of being mugged. You know, you're happy when you make it to the 18th hole at Carnoustie, but you know, you're more happy to be off that golf course. It really kicks your teeth in every single.
Always the potential for catastrophe at Carnoustie. This week, those three magnificent golf courses in Scotland host the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship, an annual gathering of the DP World Tour's top stars, also family members. Play will rotate on the old course, Carnoustie and Kings Barnes, as mentioned, for the first three rounds before the cut. Then the final round will be played on the old course at St. Andrews on Sunday. A lot of star power in the field this week, including standouts for both the PGA Tour and LIV Golf. You got the likes of Rory McIlroy in the field, Matt Fitzpatrick, Fleetwood, Horschel, Shane Lowry is in this field. John Rahm continuing his DP World Tour. You got Brooks Koepka and Patrick Reed from the LIV Golf Circuit. Now, how about this nugget? Commissioner Jay Monahan and PIF Governor Yasser Al-Rumayyan are grouped for the first round of the event as the PGA Tour continues to negotiate with Saudi Arabia's Public Investment Fund. Now, Monahan will play alongside Billy Horschel on Friday at Kings Barnes. Monahan will play with Rory McIlroy and McIlroy's dad, Jerry. Then on Saturday at St. Andrews, McIlroy will be paired with Al-Rumayyan, with Jay Monahan and LIV member Louis Oosthuizen. Now, Billy Horschel spoke about the week ahead and said the following on playing with Jay Monahan and Yasser Al-Rumayyan: anything that we can show the game of golf, especially the fans, that things are trying to go in the right direction. We are all trying to make this work and figure out how the game of golf is going to work in a couple of years, but really how we are going to set ourselves up for the next several decades is a positive. Tell you what, Eamon, Yasser Al-Rumayyan a year ago played with Martin Slumbers, now going to play with Jay Monahan. LIV Golf, if it's not thriving, it's existing. It matters in the greater ecosystem of golf. But what does the, I guess, the image, the vision of Monahan and Yasser playing side by side, does it tell the fans something? Does it matter?
Well, it's always nice to see busy executives getting time to fit in a round of golf, I suppose, or three, at least this week. A lot of this is performative because this narrative has, and it bubbles up every few weeks, where nothing's happening, there's no progress, somebody is asleep on the job. And that hasn't actually been the case because there have been a lot of talks going on, a lot of meetings, and so much of this is dictated by the Department of Justice now in terms of timeframes. So to me, this is a very easy way for Monahan and Al-Rumayyan to signal that there is a relationship, that there is a dialogue going on, that while there may not be momentum as such, as most fans would understand it, there's at least some inching along kind of progress towards whatever their end game is in this. And I think it's an effort to try to stave off the suggestion that nothing is happening. But the reality is that the time frame is not within their gift to determine. Because they have a twin-track conversation going on with the Department of Justice, but it is ultimately the DOJ and its influence and whatever red flags it raises even before anything is announced that will determine the pace of progress here. So to me, this is just kind of, it's a smoke signal to suggest to fans that there is momentum or at least something happening.
I just wonder how much patience the fans will have. You can't help but notice the absence, the lack of what the President's Cup had in terms of no Cam Smith, no Joaquin Neiman, no Bryson DeChambeau, no Brooks Koepka. I was on the ground, and even during this four-day, you know, match play event, in the back of our heads was, well, this isn't necessarily what it could have been. And that's been the story of golf over the last year and a half. It's the glimpse of Rory and Bryson for a day or two, you know, in the sand hills of North Carolina. I'm glad that Yasser and Jay are getting together, but my goodness, every day that ticks, every week that goes by, that this game is splintered, I think the fans lose patience. There's football going on in the fall. I'll tell you what, the executives have to get their house in order. And you're right, the tough thing is it's not all in their purview what this final thing will look like, as the Department of Justice will have the loudest voice.
And a lot of people, particularly you hear from players, they talk about unifying the game. What they mean is unifying it for them, which is that the best players in the world will play together on a schedule that they like, be it global or more domestic. They're all making a dangerous assumption here. If you accept the notion, and there does appear to be some evidence for this, that fans have been turned off by what they see as several years now of entitled money grubbing, it's an awfully generous leap to think that the fans will rush back if you can just get all the entitled money grubbers under one roof again.
Yeah.
The damage that has been done here in terms of fan loyalty to any kind of product, regardless of what tour you're talking about, but the idea of men's professional golf, has clearly suffered fan erosion. It's an awfully generous assumption to think those people are coming back.
It's a great point you make. And you think about the days and weeks and months and in some cases years that would follow an NBA walkout or a Major League Baseball strike or NFL, you know, lockouts and different things. Those left a scar. Those left a mark. And when you're in golf, and listen, golf has a small but passionate fan base. I mean, make no mistake.
Something else to do on a Sunday afternoon if they ain't watching, right?
No, it's true. But I do think there will be. It'll take the likes of Rory McIlroy is going to be in group and Billy Horschel. And, you know, Rory's a globalist. He's lived in the Middle East. He plays on the PGA Tour, the DP World Tour. It's going to take Rory arm in arm with a Brooks Koepka, Bryce and John Rahm. Like, these guys have to get together at some point and do a lot of outreach, I believe, with the fans. And the PGA Tour is going to have to continue to do massive outreach. And whatever this newfangled PGA Tour / Live League looks like, the outreach is going to have to be outside the box thinking, big and bold, to get these fans back. Because you go on the street and talk to folks, they're confused and they're tired and they do not want to hear about money. They are tired of talking about it.
They really are. And as much outreach as has to be done by those top stars, it's not just the outreach to the fans, because to get to any endpoint of a deal, they also have to, particularly on the PGA Tour, win over the rank-and-file members of their own tour. And not all of those members are, frankly, incentivized to see a deal. There are guys out there now who don't have to beat John Rahm to win a FedEx Cup bonus, or they don't have to beat Brooks Koepka to win a golf tournament. Why would they be incentivized to see either of those guys return? They're not necessarily thinking about the broader good of a product or certainly what fans would like to see. So there are so many different constituencies here, and they're not necessarily all aligned. I think the key constituencies at the very top in terms of players and the executives seem to be aligned in trying to navigate their way through this. But there are a lot of folks out there who aren't necessarily all rowing in the same direction.
Yeah, so many questions still to be answered. One thing I am thankful for is the Alfred Dunhill links. A lot of great golf to watch this week. And Matt Fitzpatrick earned his 9th career win on the DP World Tour last year in the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship. Ball Scottish weather shortened the event to 54 holes, you might remember, but a 6-under par round of 66 at the Old Course was good enough for the title. He also won the Pro-Am Team Championship with his mom, Susan. Very cool. Yeah, this is a coffee golf type of week. Lots to watch. Get up early, 7 a.m. Eastern time on Thursday and Friday and Saturday. Then Sunday, a little bit earlier, 6:30 a.m. Eastern time on Golf Channel. Our colleague John Cook on the call this afternoon. Great college career at The Ohio State University. 11-time winner on the PGA Tour. 10 wins on PGA Tour champions and one of the best heads of hair in the game. And Cookie joins us now ahead of this afternoon's coverage at the Blessings Collegiate Invitational. Cookie, always great to spend some time with you. I'm curious about college golf. You did it at the height of power. What's the value of college golf in terms of the big picture of a career?
Yeah, it's interesting, Damon. And I think it's a showcase where, you know, a lot of the men and the women, they evaluate where their careers are. They evaluate where their games are, if they're getting better throughout college. We're televising a lot of college golf, and now they're getting used to, you know, the commotion, the cameras, the boom mics, you know, being around them. And that's why I think a lot of these kids are better prepared when they go out to play. So, you know, the impact of college golf, it just, you know, it's a worldwide global game. Men and the women on all the teams are, you know, very diverse in, you know, what type of cultures they come from. And it's just, you know, it's a great learning experience. I loved team golf. I loved representing Ohio State University. I was a big team guy growing up. So this is a little bit different, you know, when you're playing for your other teammates, your coach, and your institution. I loved it. I couldn't wait to get back to be with my teammates and go play. And then you go off onto your summer and you have your individual summer events. So it's great for the game of golf and exposes it to the world.
Speaking of the passage of years, John, it's October 2nd. I know it's a big day for you, so you'll excuse us if we just enjoy some of your birthday cake here, since you're actually
somebody's
working.
Somebody's birthday.
Oh, absolutely. Go right ahead. Help yourself.
How's the course playing this week, John?
It's tough, Eamon. It's 7,700 yards for the men. It's over 6,500 for the women. Mm. It's a big ballpark. It's a big golf course. And you have to have discipline and patience around here. It's really good golf. If you have it going, you can shoot a good score. There's some key holes that you have to play well. A couple big par fours that you can have disasters on. But there's kind of danger lurking everywhere you go around the Blessings. And the weather has been great. The wind was up yesterday, so the scores were up as well. The golf course played a little spicy yesterday, so the players really had, you know, a big task in front of them. But the golf course and John Tyson, they have been absolutely overwhelmingly welcoming to all the players, the coaches, the fans, the media. Us, we've always had a great time here. They put on a great show. And as John Tyson says, it's important to him to be part of this culture, be part of the college game. And that's, we're fortunate to be able to be here.
You need patience at that golf course. I mean, you have a little patience, Cookie. Yeah. I'm enjoying your birthday cake.
But, there you go.
Your mentors, think about your mentors, Cookie, your dad, Ken Venturi, and players who've looked up to you like Tiger and Patrick Cantlay. What have you appreciated the most about your place in this beautiful game?
You know, that's a great question, Damon. And Ken Venturi always told me to, you know, make sure you give back. We tried to pay him for his services. I started working with him when I was 14 years old. And that's for well over 30 years that we were together. And all he said was, you know, don't keep this to yourself. If you find somebody that's worthy of our knowledge, then, you know, please pass it on. And that's what we've tried to do. And that's, you know, what I'm maybe most proud of is, you know, I played this game for a long time. I won my share of tournaments. I lost my share of tournaments. But, you know, those experiences I can pass on to, you know, the younger players that have asked me for advice. I'm happy to give it to them. I feel like I had a nice place in this game, and I'm pretty proud of that. So anytime I can help, like Ken Venturi helped me, went out of his way to, to get me to a better level as a junior, into college, amateur, and into the professional ranks. I think it's great to have a mentor like that, not just a swing coach, but somebody you can bounce things off of that have, you know, succeeded and failed in this game at that highest level.
Great player, great teammate, and your birthday cake is great.
Mm. We'll save you a slice, Cookie. Don't worry
about it. As well. Happy birthday.
Thank you, sir. All that means is it's a little easier to shoot my age. So that's, I'm going to try to go out next week and see if I can shoot 67.
There you go. We'll listen to you on the broadcast. Happy birthday, buddy.
I appreciate it, guys. Always great to be with you.
Well, Nick Doherty doesn't have a statue in St. Andrews, but he does have a win. Back in 2007, he shot a 1-under par 71 in the final round to win the Alfred Dunhill Links Championship for what was his second career victory on the DP World Tour.
Well, a little more on the bio of Nick Doherty. Three-time winner of the DP World Tour, 2002. Sir Henry Cotton, Rookie of the Year, finished tied for 7th in the 07 U.S. Open at Oakmont and paired nicely with Luke Donald back at the 01 GB&I Walker Cup team victory over the United States. And Nick Doherty of Sky Sports joins us now from St. Andrews, very special place for him. Great to see you, buddy. Your new Golf Pass show, Golfer's Guide, Playing in the Wind. What kind of tidbits can we expect to see? It's hard to play in the wind, at least for mortals like us, Nick.
Yeah, it really is. It's one of the challenging parts of the game. It's one of the great parts of the game. And obviously, links golf gives us the greatest opportunity to experience it. You've got to have all the shots as well. So the ability to just hit one shot all the time, it's great to have that. And a lot of golf courses, it works. But when you come over and experience something like they are this week at the Dunhill Links, where you're across these beautiful old links courses, the ability to change your ball flight is something you've got to be able to do in the wind. And obviously hit shapes as well, to be able to use the wind to be your friend. It doesn't always have to be your enemy. So, yeah, it was great to film all that content around the ability of maneuvering ball flights in particular and some of the things that go wrong, because we're all guilty of making the simple things a little more complicated than we need to at times.
Nick, I'm pretty sure you were in the field at the windiest golf tournament I ever attended, the Open at Birkdale back in 2008, where it howled all day, every day, for 4 days. The wind was certainly a factor that week. It's going to be a factor this week in St. Andrews as well. What's the key attribute for guys who are actually trying to make a living in weather like that?
Yeah, you know, when I say the wind, it can be your friend, it isn't always your enemy. It was definitely the enemy that week at the Open at Royal Birkdale. That was brutal. And you know what? Funny enough, I remember Greg Norman there, who very nearly won that championship if it wasn't for the brilliance of Padraig Harrington. He was a threat all the way through, and he never once tried to fight it. It gets to a certain strength when it's really blowing, when you're almost hitting S-shaped shots, because you try and draw it into a left or right, and then it turns it back the other way and it starts heading the other direction. And Greg was a brilliant one for just riding the wind. Even if the hole said, hit a draw here, if that wind was off the left, he's aiming way left and letting it come across the fairway. So for me, some of the great wind players know when to fight it, but they also know when to try and use it to help them out. And it's about using space. Generally, you get a bit of space, especially on the old course. So working it into the corners and using the wind to try and help you is certainly going to be key for them this week. I don't think it's going to blow that strong here. And later in the year, the ground hasn't got that punch in it that it would have had during the Open, say, at Royal Troon, when there was a bit more go in the ground. But still, yeah, having control of your ball flight, being able to hit all the shapes is going to be key.
Well, the 08 Open was special. So was the 2007 Alfred Dunhill Links, won by yourself by two over Justin Rose. Just what's it like being back in the neighborhood at one of your great triumphs in this game?
Well, the hard bit for me is having to make sure I remind all of my colleagues on Sky that I did it, because it's quite hard to get a high moment in this team. Obviously, we give each other a bit of grief. But yeah, you know, for me to win at the old course, Jack Nicklaus said only the great champions in the game have won at St. Andrews. He meant the Open, but, you know, when I tell the story, I leave out what it was. you know, being able to triumph there on that green is extra special. To win anywhere on tour is something that means the world to any player, but to win here and to win a tournament of this magnitude as well, it's a great field. It's always a great field, and this week will be no different. So for whoever's the champion, it's going to be a remarkable experience. And as much as a lot of these guys will win bigger events, you know, they'll try and win major championships, and they're good enough too. Winning here is something that you would never, ever, ever forget.
And you still have the same magnificent head of hair that you had 17 years ago, Nick, which is a great tribute. There's most of the attention in tournaments usually goes on the professionals in the field. Not necessarily the case, at least Thursday at Carnoustie, when the same group will feature Jay Monahan, the PGA Tour Commissioner, and Yasser Al-Rumian, the Governor of the Public Investment Fund of Saudi Arabia. Would you interpret this as just a kind of their way of signalling that there is still a relationship or a dialogue or some kind of progress going on there?
I would say so, Eamon. Yeah, you know, I think the optics are good. It shows a willingness to publicly show that they're trying to sort this out. We know those conversations are happening. We know it's for the benefit of the game that we find a solution where the best players are playing alongside each other again. I think a lot of it is very good PR. And I think I don't think any business is going to take place on the golf course. As much as the golf course has always been the place for business, if you listen to any good corporate guests at an event, they do some of the best work in the 4 or 5 hours they spend out on the links. I think this is more how it looks, and it's a willingness publicly to say we are really trying to pull all this together. I think we're a long, long way away from that still happening. I think there's a lot of issues that are outside of those two men. That needs to be addressed. And as we know, one of the big ones is going to be how the other players feel about it, because we're seeing now that a lot of them are sort of really sort of holding what's important to them at the forefront of what's at the best for the game. So the people in this moment are thinking about what works for me. Well, I didn't take the money, so why should they be allowed back? And that mentality, as much as I understand it, it's going to get in the way of it coming back together. There's got to be some give in this, in terms of we allow some forgiveness for players that went away and they come back. You know, they're not going to be giving back all the money, you know, that they took to go over there. And also from Liv's perspective, they don't want that to be a case of, well, we'll all come back together, but we'll scrap everything we've done to this point. They believe in their product and they believe it should have a place. So I just think, as you well know, I'm preaching to the choir here, there's a long, long way to go. But I think optically, it looks good. And it's nice to see that enemies once are now not just willing to be in the same room, but on the same course together.
Nick, the professional game has been splintered now for more than 2 years. You talk to fans in the United States, they're weary, they're tired. Mm-hmm. I'm just curious what you're hearing from fans in the UK. Is it a similar sentiment?
To be honest, you know, one of the funny things I get when I'm at the club, when I'm not working, is sometimes they'll have a pop at us in the coverage for, why are you always going on about it? Why are you always talking? You're just forever going on. We don't care. We just want to watch golf. Golf fans want to watch golf, but golf fans also want to watch the best players. And when we get weeks where we have them all together, they're very special. And arguably the greatest champion over the last couple of years has been the major championships, because as much as they've always stood above the rest, even more so now, because it's when we do get to have the best players together. And there's that added edge. Come on, we know it's there. The fact that it was something else added to that Bryson-Rory showdown at Pinehurst number two this year added to the drama. But I think fans are exactly what you said. They're weary of the constant conversation. And the thing is, they're going to have to be patient, because it's not going to be like the end of this week. We're going to get a memo going out saying, oh, by the way, guys, we're all back together from January 1st. It's all going to be good to go. It's going to take a lot of time to iron all this out, how it looks. And I think there is definitely fatigue from fans. And I think there's fatigue from players to a degree. At the same time, we shouldn't take away from the fact that they are doing very, very well. Whichever side of this you're on, there's never been a better time to be a professional golfer. They are making Brewster's billions right now, that's for sure.
Well, the fans will continue to have to be patient. Looking forward to watching the Golfer's Guide on Golf Pass. And enjoy your week at one of your great triumphs of your career, Nick. Thanks for the time.
Did you know I won here, by the way, guys?
So I've heard.
Yeah, I won here, Eamon.
Did you get your statue? Eventually, you'll get your statue as well. Just like on Tom.
Thanks, guys.
See you, pal.
Well, Kaito Onishi is a 25-year-old Korn Ferry Tour winner. The native of Japan is in his second season on tour. He's 28th on the points list heading into the finale, thanks to his win at the UNC Health Championship when he joined Ryuji Imada as the second Korn Ferry Tour winner from Japan. And Kaito joins us now from French Lick Resort in Indiana. And Kaito, you began the season with conditional status, so you didn't get into the first three events. You were the 155th man into a 156-man field in the fourth event, finished tied eighth, and you were kind of off to the races at that point. But how frustrating was it for you for that first month of the season where just the point of access was difficult?
Yeah, like you said, it's very tough to, you know, work around a schedule where you don't know which tournament you're going to get in. And yeah, I was fortunate enough to get my first start in Colombia this year, and I played really well. So that kind of really set me up for the next few, and I played really well. So, you know, it's been something that I didn't really expect. But it's been an amazing season so far.
Kaito, I read that you don't have a home base in the United States, that you travel back and forth to Japan, and you're playing great golf. How are you making all of this work?
You know, yeah, the travel is very difficult, just because, you know, whenever we have a week off, it's not like I can go to, you know, a house in the U.S. So I usually, you know, find a place to just, I don't know, practice and rest. But it's definitely difficult when it comes to, you know, resting in a hotel room, because, you know, it's not home. But yeah, I mean, I try to go home as much as I can, but definitely not enough.
What's the pressure like for you this week, Kaito? Have you done any kind of math assessment of exactly what you need from yourself to guarantee this card?
No, I did not. But I know that, you know, this course is very difficult, and I know I need to play decent for me to feel safe to secure that card. So, no, not really. You know, when I won, I didn't really think about winning. I just, you know, went out and played my game, and that's when I played my best. So I think I'm going to, you know, try to continue doing that. But, you know, obviously it's going to something that's going to creep in my head, and it's going to be difficult, but I gotta stay on track and focus on my game.
Kaito, I read that you attended the IMG Academy in Bradenton, Florida. It's world famous. I'm a tennis dad. I'm just going to throw this out there. They got tennis and golf and hoops. What's it like? My wife's watching. What's the IMG Academy like?
It's everything you dream of as an athlete, right? So, you know, there's big cafeteria, there's big gym, and there's a great facility, and, you know, obviously different sports. So, you know, on the weekend, if you want to go play other sports, it's right there. And that's what I used to do. I always played tennis a lot with my friends that play tennis at Academy. So, yeah, it's definitely not a regular experience you would have at a regular, you know, middle school or high school. But no, it's awesome.
What he didn't mention is kind of he's the father of triplets, so it would also be extraordinarily expensive if he decided to go down that road. There have been some reports, kind of, that there may be a reduction, and all the changes with the PGA Tour, there may be a reduction in the number of cards awarded to Korn Ferry Tour players, maybe starting with the 2026 season. Is that a talking point out there among the guys, the fear that it might be less than the 30 cards that are available now?
No, not really. I mean, we don't really talk about that. And especially, you know, towards the end of the season, we're really focused on, you know, making sure our game is really good. But I think the way I look at it is, you know, whether that's 20 or 30 cards, right? I feel like if you want to succeed in the PGA Tour, you know, those guys are really good. No, you know, Korn Ferry guys are awesome. They're really good. But PGA Tour guys are very good at golf. So regardless, I have to play good golf, and that's what I'm focused on.
You're playing a lot of good golf, Kaito. It's great to talk to you. Best of luck this week in Indiana. I hope to speak to you again down the road. Best of luck.
Thank you so much.
We're back on Golf Today. Baseball fans everywhere remember former Atlanta Braves pitcher John Smoltz, who was inducted into the Baseball Hall of Fame back in 2015, part of the Braves dynasty, played from 88 to 08, eight-time All-Star, World Series champ in 95, Cy Young Award winner in 96, and 08 became just the 16th pitcher ever to record 3,000 Ks, could start, could close, and guess what? A great golfer as well. And he'll join Super Bowl champ and Pro Football Hall of Famer Jerome Bettis, Stanley Cup champ and Hockey Hall of Famer Mike Modano, and 14-year NBA vet and former basketball analyst John Barry to headline the Pro Cup at Innisbrook Resort from December 9th through the 14th. And then get this, active and former pro athletes from the worlds of basketball, baseball, football, and hockey will compete head-to-head in four sports-specific golf tournaments spanning next year to crown the best player from each league. The Pro Cup, an annual team competition, brings all sports leagues together in a Ryder Cup-style match play tournament to determine which league prevails on the course. It's great to have the Hall of Famer Smoltz with us. What should we know about this Pro Rivals Open? I mean, aren't you busy enough with golf to get involved with more golf?
Yeah, this is going to be epic. I'm telling you, you know, when we all play in our sports, we have the competitive juices to survive our own sport. And then golf allows us to play a lot longer than what we did and the competition void that exists for all former athletes. Everybody that plays celebrity golf has gotten better and better over the years, but there's not a lot of team events. This is going to be a team sport type Ryder Cup where we're going to crown a champion. It's going to grow every year. You mentioned about each sport having an individual tournament to determine the best player in the sport. That will take place in the off season of every sport where the current and former players could play. So we just got over the President's Cup. If you don't like match play, there's something wrong with you. And I think team events in celebrity golf is the way to go. Even though we have some iconic events like American Century Championship, this is going to be pretty neat to see teams and leagues come together for bragging rights.
We've got to give you credit, John. We never actually thought it was possible you would find a way to play even more golf, but it does seem as though you've managed to do that. Can you give us any hint who's going to be on your team?
Yes, we've got obviously a really deep bench. We got a big roster in baseball, but we've got Mark Mulder. We've got guys like my former teammate, Tom Glavine, Josh Donaldson, Brian McCann. We've got a slew of really, really good golfers. We've got Joe Carter, Kyle Loesch, Tyler Clippard. So we're going to have a really good blend of pitchers and position players, along with some pretty darn good golfers. So as we build this thing out, the goal for each year is to get each league to have their players get better, right? So that they can represent the next year, because there will be a Ryder Cup every year after the four tournaments take place. So there's a lot of pressure on me as a captain in baseball, because we have a really good team, but hockey and NFL and NBA will have a lot to say about it. And I just can't wait to put the teams together, to create strategy, because it's unique, right? It's a four-team Ryder Cup versus two teams. So you have a round robin for 2 days, and then you have a championship in third and fourth on the final day. So all the points will move forward.
You mentioned the President's Cup. The Internationals have now lost 10 events in a row. You know what it's like to be on a team, to win, to lose, to build camaraderie. If you were sitting in a room with Ernie Els, Mike Weir, Trevor Immelman, Camilo Vijayguss, Jeff Ogilvy, some of the captains of the Internationals, what would you tell them? How do you dig out of a hole?
Well, the biggest thing is you start gaining momentum off of what you were able to do, even though you get a loss, right? And I think the big thing that when you're trying to build something and you're trying to kind of like take over what hasn't been very good, you have to build off of something. And there was a lot of matches that went down to the wire. And this team that they're trying to get to the winner's circle, they start building off of that. And you start getting players to buy in. So it's really unique in golf, because there's not many team events, right? There's just not. And it takes a minute to try to work towards being a partner and being part of a team. You don't want to let that other player down. You don't want to let your team down. It's different when you're individually letting yourself down. That's one thing. But when you start becoming part of a team, you want to check in and you want to do your part.
Speaking of individual golf, John, you've been, I think it's four times to the final stage of Champions Tour Q School. Is that still an ambition that you harbor, to earn your card and go out there and measure yourself against the best guys at that age?
Well, the reality is I do it to gauge my game. There's no real chance, even though I kind of have this pie in the sky, like what if, but to get a card, this is the hardest tour in America to make and get a card. So I want to do it to try to see where my game's at. If I can get to the final stage, it just gives me another tournament to play in to really work on that. I had retired last year after the final stage, and I really figured that this was it. And then when I got my second hip replaced, I unretired. I'm back. I signed up again to try to see where my game can be at 57, because I was having too many physical liabilities that were just creating too much. It wasn't fun. I love to play golf, as you guys know. The more tournaments, the merrier. And I learned by failing, and I failed miserably in that final stage. And I learned some lessons along the way that I think could serve me better for whatever kind of golf I play for the rest of my life.
You're a great baseball player, broadcaster, golfer, but I heard you might have missed your calling, and that from the age of 4 to 7, you might have been one of the great young accordion players ever known to man. Like, what happened to that accordion, and why don't you play anymore?
Well, this was an embarrassing moment for my parents. I hadn't played. I had an accordion there that was too small, and I was just glad they gave me an opportunity to pursue my dream of playing baseball. I come from a family of musicians. It's not a popular instrument anymore, but I sure enjoyed my upbringing. It taught me a lot, discipline, practice. There's so much that I've learned from playing music, honestly, in sports, that you'd be surprised to think that it contributed in such a way.
John, baseball lost one of its more colorful and controversial characters a couple of days ago with the passing of Pete Rose. Where do you stand on whether or not he ought to be in the Hall of Fame?
Yeah, so, you know, a lot of that has been going on for so long. And in the beginning of this whole conversation, you had Pete kind of fighting for his right to say it didn't happen, and then finally gave way. And, you know, every player reads that rule number 21, and It's unfortunate because he's one of the greatest players of all time. On the field, there's no question. It's not even a discussion. He belongs in the Hall of Fame. But when you start dissecting what the Hall of Fame represents, then you start opening a Pandora's box. And believe me, it's not full. It's not full of the Hall of Saints, right? There's a lot of people who have done things that need forgiveness and certainly wish they'd gone a different way. But, you know, for Pete Rose, when you embody hustle and you embody the way that you play the game, I don't think anybody did it more perfectly than Pete Rose. It's a shame the off the field, and you could say on the field as a manager, it wasn't a player, affected the way that he is going to be viewed for the rest of time. Whether or not now he goes in the Hall of Fame, now that he has passed, time will tell. But certainly when you think about how to play the game, he did it and did it with – he left everything on the field.
Speaking of Pandora's boxes being open, professional golf has been splintered now, John, for more than 2 years. What do you consume? Do you watch? Do you have any thoughts on where things stand? And knowing that there are basically these parallel tracks with great players on a couple of different circuits.
You know, I'm a big believer in that everybody has a choice and they should be given a choice to do what they want, but not everybody can have it both ways. And, you know, you make choices in sports and you live with the circumstances, and their choices got paid reward for the LIV Golf. But at the same time, you know, there are leagues, there are rules, and there are opportunities for now young players to make a living that may not have ever made a living before and become stars. I can't think of another example in any other sport where you could go somewhere else, get that money, and then come back. But I guess they're going to try to figure that out. You know, it'd be like the version of baseball going to Japan and then coming back and playing in the World Series or only the big events. And I just don't think that in the essence of what was created, the guys that stayed, you know what? I root for them. And I root for anybody who makes decisions and stays with those decisions and doesn't look back. But the one thing about golf, it's such a great sport that you can play for so long that they've got to work this out. Somehow, some way, they've got to figure it out so that we don't have these kind of dual conversations and we don't talk about some of the greatness in golf on the same field or on the same golf course.
It's October, John. You know what that means. You used to work a lot in this month. Not anymore. Are you hanging on with your Braves in the playoffs or are you looking farther afield?
Well, you know, for my role now with Fox, I get to go Saturday and cover the Dodgers and whoever they play. It might be the Braves, might be the Padres. But my job now is as a national broadcaster to bring about all those things that I learned and played in the game and love. And certainly everybody knows I played for the Atlanta Braves. As a national broadcaster, there is about 50% of the viewership thinks we are rooting for the other team because when we come in, it's not the local broadcasters. And I've heard that for 8 years. I was warned when I took the job, you're going to be accused of rooting for people that you somehow want this team to win more than the other team. And when I did the Atlanta Braves World Series, to make that point even further, I got crushed by my own fans here in Atlanta because they didn't think I rooted enough for the Atlanta Braves. It's an unenviable position to be in, but my job is one to bring in the game. So I really look nationally now at everything, and I'll be concentrating on the Dodgers series, whoever they play, in about 3 or 4 days.
Well, I'm happily biased. My Dodgers looking very strong, and the Pro Rivals Open's mostly looking very strong as well. Give my best to the bus, Jerome Bettis. I'm a fan, and we'll speak to you soon. Thanks so much, pal.
Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
We're back on golf today. One of the great moments of the season came back in March when Peter Malnati won the Valspar for his first win on tour in more than 8 years. Shot that final round 67 to finish at 12 under 272 at Innisbrook to beat Cameron Young by a couple shots. Very emotional for the second win of his career. Family ran out on the green. Peter Malnati joins us now from Jackson, where he's also been a PGA Tour winner. It's great to see you, buddy. I want to talk about Valspar. Great interview afterwards with Arkira K. Dixon. How many people have come up to you just to talk about the gratitude you expressed on that Sunday?
Yeah, you know, I have heard from people that really that interview really resonated with people, which is great because that was raw emotion spilling out of me. So that was genuine, it was still a memory that I really really cherish, and the fact that I was able to share kind of how that truly felt and how it impacted me with people, and that people resonated with that means a lot to me.
Certainly was one of the most memorable weeks we've seen this year, Peter. You've struggled a little bit since then. Is that in any way attributable to just how much is being asked of policy board members? Because we've seen some of your peers on the board, like Patrick Cantley and Webb Simpson, haven't delivered the results that we're accustomed to seeing out of them. Is the ask that much in terms of what you guys are being roped into right now?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely exceeded, I think, all of our expectations. I think, you know, Adam Scott, who's set to come on the policy board, was probably the most knowing participant who, you know, it's admirable. He is at a point in his career now where he wants to shape, you know, the game going forward. I would say Webb and myself, when we were running for seats on the policy board, we probably didn't have the foresight to see it being quite as, you know, global, I'll say, as it has been. We were definitely, I think, more attuned to, like, inside the ropes, competition matters, and thinking that's where our time would be spent, and it, you know, became much more broad than that. So there's been a pretty serious time commitment. To answer your question, though, I would say, you know, no, I don't think that has really affected my performance. I've had two wins on tour, and other than that, I've been a very, very mediocre PGA Tour player for a long time. So I've played this poorly as a board member and this poorly as a non-board member. I've got a lot of good. I think I'm still improving, which is great, and I feel good about that. But my performance this year has been pretty much on par with most years I've had on tour.
A lot of guys out there would have a career of what you describe as mediocrity, Peter, and be quite happy with that. How many steps can you actually take on the locker room or in the range without a player coming up to you just to voice an opinion or ask a question, not even about the global issues in the game, but just simply you're there as a representative for them on the board and they've got a complaint or a suggestion?
Yeah, that happens. You know, certainly daily, multiple times a day out here for sure. And, you know, there's, for me, I've gotten a skill that my wife has always said I'm terrible at, and she's right, but I've gotten a lot better with practice here these last 2 years, is compartmentalization. And, you know, I know that there's a time when I am, you know, a board member who asked my peers to vote for me because I wanted to represent them, and I take that role seriously. And then there's a time when I sneak to the back of the driving range and I go do my work. And I've got to be able to keep those two things. You know, they both have a place that's important to me, and I've got to be able to keep them both. And I'm able to do that fairly well, I would say. But it is definitely a daily thing on Torreon right now. Just there's a lot of tumult. How do you say that word? There's a lot of the game is in a place right now where we're trying to figure out a lot of things. And so, you know, everyone does have an idea and an opinion. And for me to do my job as a board member, it's important that I'm able to have those conversations with my peers. And so that's a part of this that I do, you know, I accept and I enjoy sometimes even.
Well, on that note, your commissioner, Jay Monahan, will be playing golf this week with the PIF governor, Yasser Al-Rumayyan, in the Alfred Dunhill Links. Is that an encouraging sign for you? Is it agnostic, in your opinion? What should we make of what may be happening over in the UK this week?
I mean, I think it's very encouraging. I think, you know, we obviously, I think all you know, the DP World Tour and the PGA Tour have a, you know, a formalized relationship. But ultimately, what we want to see happen is we want to see, you know, the men's professional game come together in a way where we can still have rivalry. Rivalry's great. Look at what happened to the President's Cup last week. Look what happens every other year in the Ryder Cup. Rivalry is great, but if we can have a spirit of collaboration with that rivalry so it doesn't feel like we're taken away from our fans, I think that would be the most ideal outcome. And so, you know, to have Jay and Yasser together and working, that's a positive thing for our sport. I think it's great.
Amid all the change, Peter, there is some speculation that there will be a reduction in the number of fully exempt players, perhaps a reduction in the number of cards from the Korn Ferry Tour, which would presumably have to be resolved before the 2025 season starts so guys know what they're playing for status the following year. How close is the policy board to voting on a matter like that?
Not close at all. There won't be change for 2025. We're pretty established with what we want to do in 2025. And I don't know if You know, it's just obviously there is a lot of controversy and a lot of question surrounding the men's professional game right now. But 2024 has been a pretty successful year by a lot of metrics, and 2025 is going to look similar because we have our formula set, and everyone knew going into this year what they were playing for next year. But there are things on the table for 2026 in terms of, we're trying to maximize our product for the benefit of all the members of the tour and for the fans. And so there are things on the drawing board that, need, to be honest, quite a bit of time to be hashed out and thought about and considered. So I don't think we're going to see changes in eligibility moving to the 25 season. That'll be after that.
There's a lot of lofty thoughts and big numbers being tossed around with this investment from SSG. I'm struck, Peter, by after your win in Tampa, you talked about your family and the fans, and then you talked about, Valspar and the Copperheads and the Volunteers. You got really granular and got to the nitty-gritty of kind of the old-school PGA Tour, and it was similar when you won in Jackson 9 years ago. Why is it important for you to continue to kind of highlight maybe some of the unseen voices in the professional game?
Well, I'm so glad that you asked me that. Thank you, Damon. I really think, the PGA Tour, going back to, the days it was founded by Arnold Palmer and Jack Nicklaus and others, and then to, Dean Beeman's commissionership, like, the PGA Tour has been about providing a platform for golfers to play golf and a platform for communities to show off and benefit organizations that are really, really important to them. And if you look at what, if you look at what the John Deere Classic does in Moline, Illinois, you look at what the Valspar Championship does in Tampa, Florida, you look at what Joe Sanderson and Sanderson Farms have done here in Jackson, Mississippi, and you see, the true heart of the PGA Tour. Now conversations are revolving around a lot of other things, like, how do we compensate our top players fairly? We look at, comparisons with other sports, the major league sports, and we kind of lose some of what, the heart and spirit of the PGA Tour is. And for me, my dream as a kid was to play golf on the PGA Tour and play in meaningful events and to get to, I honestly, this is the way I worded it when I was probably 15 or 16 years old. I said, I just never want to have to get a real job. And for me, playing on the PGA Tour, was never about getting filthy rich. Money is a wonderful benefit of playing well. And, obviously we have superstars that drive this business who do deserve to be compensated fairly for that. But at the core, this business is about going to communities, creating a platform where professional athletes can entertain for the benefit of fans and the benefit of the communities where we play. And that is the heart and soul of the PGA Tour. And no matter how much we grow, no matter how much changes, that's something that I don't want to see change. I want to see that heart and soul stay the same. So that is really important to me, and that's why I said it when I won, and that's why I'm sharing it again now.
Peter, you were part of what was undoubtedly the saddest moment we saw on tour this year when you were playing with Grayson Murray, Charles Schwab Challenge, when he withdrew and then later took his own life. Do you believe that the tour has sufficient resources now to support guys who are struggling in what can be a pretty lonely and difficult life out there on tour if things aren't going well?
Yeah, absolutely I do. I do think, we've taken over the last 2 or 3 years. We've created, Andy Levinson and his team at the PGA Tour deserve a lot of credit because, they were actually forward thinking and ahead of that in a way, because, there's mental health resources that have been available to tour players for years. It's just really hard, to be vulnerable enough to know you need that, to seek that, to ask for that. And so obviously, when we are all touched by tragedy, and by the way, Grayson's birthday was this Tuesday, it was yesterday. Thoughts and, just thinking of his family and knowing what they're still going through and dealing with on his birthday is terrible. But the tour, certainly can we learn from that and make resources more visible, more readily available? Absolutely. But I will say that, the tour did a good job before that of having resources available and is doing a great job. moving forward of making them more accessible. And so I do think the pieces are in place there, but it's just a drum that we can't beat enough that, you know, mental health is health. And, you know, it's no different than struggling with a physical ailment like a shoulder injury or, you know, a sickness. Mental health is health, and we need to be aware of it. We need to be talking about it. We need to make it normal to talk about it. And I think the pieces are in place for that to happen.
Peter, you've always been so heartfelt and thoughtful with your time. We appreciate it and wish you a wonderful week in Jackson. Thank you.
Hey, thank you guys so much. And huge thank you to Sanderson Farms for continuing to put this on for us. This is a real treat. It's a golf course is a treat. The community is a treat. It's amazing. So thanks for this week.
Wonderful week in Jackson, Mississippi. There he is, two-time winner on the PGA Tour, Peter Malnati. Golf Today is back after this.
It's a big week on the Corn Ferry Tour. The finale of the playoffs heads to French Lick Golf Resort in Indiana, where 30 players will receive their PGA Tour cards at the end of this week. You can catch live first-round coverage tomorrow, 1 p.m. Eastern Time, on Golf Channel. Well, Paul Peterson is one of the 17 players to have already locked up his PGA Tour card for next season. Just a few weeks ago, he earned his first Corn Ferry Tour title in the Simmons Bank Open for the Snedeker Foundation. The win moved Peterson to number 15 on the season-long points list.
And tell you what, Paul's worked hard for this. He's flown all over the place, won all over the world, as you can see. He's won on the Corn Ferry Tour, won on the DP World Tour, played his college golf at OSU, 16th on the Corn Ferry Tour points list, getting that precious, priceless 2025 PGA Tour card. And great to have Paul with us. How about that? 700,000 miles flown on United alone, Myanmar, Japan, Czech Republic. What are you most proud of in the journey so far?
I think the will to just keep at it. You know, it's over time, this game wears all of us down. And, you know, I've stayed really focused on the dream, which was to get my PGA Tour card eventually. And to accomplish that goal feels really, really sweet.
Well, you've played the Gateway Tour, the Dakotas Tour, 6 years the Asian Tour, couple in Europe, Corn Ferry Tour, Japan Tour. Was this always the destination when you started out in this game? It was always the dream of the PGA Tour?
Yeah, the dream was always on the PGA Tour. The destination changed dramatically. In about 2013, 2014, I was down in Phoenix playing some mini tour events and didn't get through second stage of Q school. And met some new coaches down there in Arizona with my, you know, still coach Patrick McGuire, and he kind of had a different philosophy of, you know, traveling, trying to get on the PGA Tour through world ranking points, and you know, money was a little bit better over there, so it was like, hey, let's travel. You can still support your family and gain a lot of really valuable experience in the time that you're over there, and. It's definitely paid off.
Well, I've heard your grandfather was an inspiration and the late, great Payne Stewart was an inspiration. What should we know about your background and how you came up in this game?
My grandparents lived on a golf course growing up, so the backyard was, you know, the golf course playground, and he would always call the pro shop in the evening times for us to kind of go out and chip and putt and do stuff on the hole behind his house. So that's kind of how golf started for me. And my grandparents loved watching the PGA Tour. We loved watching Ernie and Payne and Tiger. And some of my greatest memories with them are around major championship weeks up with them, watching the best in the world win majors. And I think the most memorable for me was when Payne won in 1999 at Pinehurst, and that iconic, you know, finish when he's made this putt here on the screen. And I saw that and his excitement, and I just told myself this is what I want to do for a living.
Paul, the stats would suggest that you're one of the shorter guys on the Corn Ferry Tour, but one of the most accurate and with a deadly short game and putter. You've got a lot of strengths when you move to the PGA Tour. Do you worry at all about the distance component, since we keep hearing that it's such a power game out there now?
We got a plan for that. So I'll get some weight on hopefully here in the next 3 months with the time we have off. And I got a really nice team around me of people who are going to help me, you know, kind of shorten that gap. I wouldn't say that I'm going to chase it, but we'll be doing things, whether it's through biomechanics or putting a couple pounds on, that'll kind of help me with that. So, you know, PGA Tour, I feel like, sets up the golf courses a little bit differently too, and they're usually a little bit firmer and faster. So if I can keep hitting fairways like I am and getting a little bounce and roll, you know, I think we can get a few more yards out of the conditions that the PGA Tour provides week in and week out. And it'll be a gradual process. This isn't something that's new to me. You know, I've won 3 times all over the world. I wouldn't say that the golf course was playing firm and fast in check either when I won on the DP Tour. You know, decently soft in Nashville with some of the rain that we'd gotten coming off a hurricane. And, you know, I think if I can continue to hit as many fairways and greens and putt it better, I'll still be able to contend just fine.
Can't imagine how proud your wife Maggie and son Wyatt are. You are a PGA Tour member for 2025. Paul, thanks for the time and enjoy Indiana.
Thank you guys so much. Yeah, hopefully this sun starts sucking up some of the weather that came through here earlier this week. So, yeah, we're looking forward to a good one, and golf course is in great shape. So thank you guys for having me on.
There he is. That's Paul. And, of course, a reminder, you can catch live first-round coverage of the Korn Ferry Tour Championship tomorrow starting 1 p.m. Eastern time right here on Golf Channel.